Hey yo, and here we go. This is a special We Talk Comics interview. What you're hearing right now is a few months ago we helped out an organization called Panel One, which is a group of Calgary comic creators who was having a Kickstarter to have a 100% comics comic convention. They were successful in their Kickstarter. They were successful in their event. And it was a fantastic event, and actually they raised enough money through the Kickstarter that all of the creators were able to have their tables for free at that event and then sell their wares. So it was a very successful event, and one of the benefits that you could get, one of the incentives for the Kickstarter, was that we offered up an interview with a professional comic creator, friend of the show, Dan Juergens, who has been on the show a couple of times now. We always love having you on, Dan.
Always good to be here.
And the person who took that incentive was my pal Andrew. Andrew, say hi.
Hello.
Hello, Andrew.
Hi, Dan.
Thanks for supporting the effort.
Oh, no problem. It was totally an honor. Anything Keith says help out with, I'm always on board.
Good. That's great.
I'll try to go mad with power. All right. Well, I'm going to... Thank you both for Dan for putting your name forward, helping us out with the Kickstarter. Andrew, thanks for supporting. And one last thing for me is Dan, congratulations to you and the team on the success of Action Comics. It's been a great book, and I'm so happy to see that it's doing so well.
That makes two of us.
Oh, that's very nice of you guys. Thank you,
Andrew. Just leap into what you got then.
All right, so I think my first question for you is, which do you find is harder to manage, doing a crossover event or a fantasy football league?
Wow, well, this year it's probably going to be fantasy football league because all my teams suck. everything I had kind of thought going into the season, a lot of it is already blown up. But no, the truth of the matter really is, coordinating any kind of a company-wide crossover is always going to be difficult, and it was certainly, as I was doing Zero Hour, very difficult because I was writing and drawing that series, and it was also weekly. So in and of itself, that was a pretty big mountain to climb.
Yes, and it was a great crossover event as well.
Ah, thanks.
So as a professional that does writing and doing the art, how do you look at both processes? Like, do you set time aside to write, then do art, or is it a little bit of mixing and matching?
First of all, it depends on whether I am writing and drawing. I mean, typically, most of what I have done until the last couple of years, I both wrote and drew. And for me, when I did it that way, I always saw it as one job. I was a storyteller. And to me, it was one job because I might write a plot or an outline and then start drawing, but as I was drawing, I was also adding dialogue. I would be making changes in the story and changes in the plot, so there was this sense of fluidity to it that made it more like one process. And it wasn't like I would write a full script and then sit down and just draw it. It was much more malleable than that, and was much more of a fluid process where I was doing a little bit of everything. So that's how it was then. You know, the past couple of years, not by design, it just sort of happened. I have been much more a writer. And, really what I've been doing is designing covers on Action. But for the most part, it's just in order to keep up with it all, I've just been writing. So I'm kind of finding myself in a bit of a different spot.
Do you prefer the writing or do you miss the art?
I do miss the art, and I do want to get back to it probably sooner rather than later, because I miss that aspect of being able. You see, I think to take just a step back, I think one of the nice things about having someone write and draw a book, and I say this when I say having someone who does it, I'm referring to readers at that point. When you get that, you get a creator that is usually invested 100% in that product, more so than you do if it's just a specific writer and an artist, because at that point, a writer often has, you know, two or three books a month, maybe four or more that he's writing. An artist is often, you know, invested to a certain point, but looking perhaps to move on and draw his favorite character. But if you get someone who's writing and drawing a book, everything you get of them is on the page. And I think that is comics in its purest form. And I sort of miss being able to do that.
So recently, with the success of Batman v Superman, Doomsday coming back in action, they just recently relaunched the, or reprinted your, a nice five-volume set for the Death of Superman, which included the Superman Doomsday book, which had Hunter Prey and Doomsday War. Both books, phenomenal, but they also set the groundwork for a lot of what happened later on. For Hunter Prey, was the origin story of Doomsday always in the back of your mind that way, or was it something that kind of came out later on?
It's about two-thirds of it came later on, one-third of it was already there. And I know that the one thing I sort of had in the back of my head was this idea that Doomsday was some sort of evolutionary product. That, because I always thought it would be cool that if you could take evolution somehow, condense it into one being and have that being come back again and again, that ultimately they would evolve past their enemies, right? And so I thought that'd be kind of cool for this new character called Doomsday, but I had no idea how I was going to plug that in, so that when we finally started talking about doing something like Superman Doomsday Hunter Prey and digging into the origin and fabricating the background of this character, that is when I really started to plan it out. You kind of move from beyond general notion or general impression or general thought and really start to hone in on the specifics. And, you know, one of the things that I've always said is creation is not necessarily a linear process. And I think readers tend to think that it is, where, gee, a writer sat down on Monday, started to cook up character X, and by the time, you know, Friday afternoon rolled around, they had the first issue done. And often, creating a character, creating a concept, creating a storyline has a lot of zigs and zags to it. And, you know, I have notebooks that are just filled with notes and diagrams and sketches. And, you know, I will intend one thing and then I'll go back and look at it and say, well, no, that doesn't work. Boy, it sounded great a month ago, but right now it's bad. And you're constantly kind of going back and forth and taking old stuff and borrowing other things that you had from one concept and pulling it over to this one and stirring it all up together until you get that recipe that works.
For Hunter Prey, what was the inspiration for pretty much pitting Doomsday against Darkseid? You have like Superman's two greatest enemies that he essentially can't necessarily beat and can beat him battling, and then you have Darkseid just get destroyed, which is very scary to read, because you see Darkseid is like the ultimate evil and here's Doomsday just wiping the floor with him.
Right, and I think in a way that's fairly transparent as to what we wanted to do, and what it really was about was making sure that we could take Doomsday, and we had elevated him to a certain level by having him fight to the bitter end with Superman. But I think by also having him fight Darkseid, that at that point you're raising the stakes and you're saying that this is a little bit universal in nature, and especially with Darkseid having that awareness of who Doomsday is.
And then, sorry, continuing on to Doomsday War, which I finally had a chance to read earlier this year, you took Doomsday and made him even scarier by essentially giving him a brain. Was that just following the path of just creating the ultimate weapon?
Yeah, I think so. That, you know, when you start to think of it in those evolutionary terms, you start to lay in a logical path to follow as a writer. And I think that became the logical path for Doomsday.
And then was it more of an editorial thing to have Brainiac become the robot that he pretty much was throughout the 2000s out of the response as a result of this book?
Yeah, we, Brainiac, if we were to step back and look at what Brainiac first was when he showed up in the Burn revamp. He was kind of a, you know, carnival act there. And there was, you know, a guy, I believe his name was Milton Fine in those days. And he sort of had the black top hat and everything. You know, just it was a very different sort of Brainiac. And I think, yes, we wanted to get back to that more robotic sort of aspect of the character. And we had been working in that direction for some time.
So going back to your amazing first run on Superman, is there any artists during that time that you would love to work with again on the current issue to like bring back for like a fill-in or something?
Oh, you know, any of the guys, it was great working with Tom Grummett. He and I just did an issue of Justice League together that really dug into the origin of, well, not the origin, but dug into the head of Lex Luthor and this idea that he had just put on the Superman armor. And so it was great working with Tom again. I have tremendous respect for Butch Geis. I'd always be up for working with him. I'd always be up for working with Steve Epting, who kind of was there towards the end as we wrap things up. Same thing with Ron Franz and especially John Bogdanoff, because, you know, the stuff that John had done on Man of Steel was so fresh and full of energy, and he just does remarkable work. I'm always up for working with those guys again. And by the same token, you know, it was great to be able to work with someone like Jose Luis Garcia Lopez on a few issues and write for him. So we really had a lot of good guys who were on the books in those times, and I thought brought a unique visual perspective to the world of Superman, and I'd always be totally up for working with them again.
Are there any current artists working today you would love to see do a Superman issue?
Oh, yeah. I mean, quite honestly, there are way too many to mention. You know, I think that the nice thing that we see now is sort of a new appreciation for Superman that really gets into different aspects of the character. There are those who draw him, shall we say, as a less imposing figure. Just in terms of body size and shape, he might be, say, a little more normal like Doc Shaner has done. Yet it's Superman nevertheless. There's this sense of it being Superman about it. And to me, what I always look for is this idea that I think a good Superman artist captures this sense of nobility with Superman that is absolutely essential. And it's got to be there in his posture. It has to be there in the way others perceive him. It's there in how he's positioned on the page and in each panel, and just this sense of presence that really makes Superman unique among comic characters.
So going back to, you mentioned the Justice League where you with about Lex, how are you looking at Lex, writing Lex, or this new 52 Lex, compared to how you had read him in the past, since they are two separate Lexes but there's some similarities?
Well, I actually think that there are a lot of similarities, but the difference would be that the Luthor I would have written in the past, it's safe to say that the world was totally aware of Luthor's transgressions. This Lex Luthor, the world is not nearly as aware of his transgressions. And for example, if we go back to, I think it was Forever Evil, we see Lex Luthor take Ted Kord's father, I believe it was, and throw him out of a helicopter to his death. That's a pretty evil act. You know, he is a murderer, yet the world doesn't quite know that. Superman doesn't know that. So I think this is a Luthor who has been able to hide that aspect of himself and makes him even more devious. And I think what we're trying to play with here is this idea that in my head, I think Lex Luthor wants to do good. I think Lex Luthor wants to rise to that position where he is respected and accepted as a hero. But at the same time, I don't think he's capable of getting there. And I don't think he's capable of getting there, because until he would stand out in the middle of a public square and say, yes, I am a murderer and I will pay for my crimes, that at that point, he is not a hero.
Interesting. Throughout your career, have you found certain characters that you find easier to get in the head of compared to other ones?
Oh, yeah. I think that's true of every writer. And I've always felt, I think, that I have a certain relationship with Superman, as well as, you know, most of his supporting cast, the way they work, the way they interact, what they sort of stand for, how they're differentiated from one another, you know, that kind of thing. How do Clark and Lois see Perry White? How does he see them and all of that? And I think the other one who I clearly can get in the head of quite well is Booster Gold. I think I know exactly who he is for obvious reasons. But and there are other ones too. So when you are a writer and you get to that point where you have that sort of a relationship with fictional characters, I think it's a special place to be, and that extends to the readers as well, because they perceive it, they get in on it, and we all do this as readers. We say, you know, this writer is really in touch with us, what is happening on this book. They really shape these characters, and it's a part of them, and it's really fun to hook a ride on that sort of a ride.
Are there any? What characters have you found to be more difficult or take longer to figure out and kind of see what they're thinking?
That's a good question. And I don't know that it extends to anything so easy as it is what kind of characters, as much as it is there are different characters who, for whatever reason, and sometimes the reasons aren't readily apparent on the surface, that you just can't get a handle on, or you just feel that, you know, once you have put your spin on that character and you were writing that character the way you think it's right, that maybe it isn't, that for some reason it's sort of like you get, it's hard to explain, Andrew, but sometimes you get to the point where you get 80% of it or you get 90% of it, but it's that last 10% that gets really elusive and you just can't nail it down, or you just can't find it for whatever reason. And that isn't because it's any particular type of character. Sometimes it just is.
It's interesting you say that, because I know, I want to say it was like 3 issues of Action back, someone mentioned on Twitter about how they loved how you had written Wonder Woman. And you had made a comment about how you had reached out to Greg Rucka to kind of feel that voice.
Right.
And is that a thing you usually do, to like talk to other writers to get the feel for it?
No, this was actually a very different sort of circumstance, which is I had just started writing Action and Greg had just started writing Wonder Woman, and I hadn't seen anything that he had done. He had not seen anything I had done. So I was talking to Greg and I said, you know, here's the situation. I am going to be dealing with Clark and Lois and Diana, and they're going to be together in a room. Tell me what Diana is like now so I know how they will react. And we batted some ideas back and forth, and a lot of it is fueled by the tremendous respect I have for Greg Rucka's work in general and with Diana specifically. And I wanted to understand where he wanted to take that book and that character. And so our discussions kind of swerved around this notion of, you know, he didn't know where I was going with Superman. This was before any of this stuff had hit the stands, and we were just putting Rebirth together. So, of course, I wanted to be consistent with what Greg was doing, and I think he was extending that same sort of courtesy to me, and we kind of put it together, and it was great. And, you know, anytime it's a situation like that where I'm going to be dealing with a character and there is another writer handling that book, and I haven't seen any of the work yet, so I'm not sure of the approach they're going to take, yeah, I will always reach out to them at that point to say, you know, how can we make this work best? How can we make it consistent?
you've gone back and forth between several characters many times throughout your great career. Is it always fun going back to a character you've written, or is it like, oh, I need to figure out where this character is at now? Is it, yeah, I get this toy back type situation?
Not always. It can sometimes be a mistake. And the best example of that would probably be when, we were a few months into the New 52 and George Perez was writing and drawing Superman. And DC asked Keith Giffen and I if we wanted to step in after George. And my inclination was to say no. And in fact, I first did. And it was actually Keith who talked me into it, which I will never forgive him for. But it was the wrong place and the wrong time. And really, us having different views of what a Superman comic would be from where DC probably was at that point. And that was a classic case where my first inclination, which was saying no, was something I should have stuck with.
I'm just going to jump in for a second, Andrew. It's interesting just hearing you talk about that part, Dad, because it's when that first issue that the two of you did came out, I very much okay, this is exactly Superman as I know him, and then it drifted within a couple of issues, and I don't know whether I know there was some there was some kind of crossover thingy that kind of never came together for the Wildstorm characters. I don't know how much of that was put on or whether it was just kind of the DNA wasn't there.
Right. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. I agree with what your analysis is on everything there. And it was just a time in which there was a lot of outside influence and opinion that was working its way toward the books. And I certainly thought that I knew what I wanted to do with a Superman comic and how I wanted to shape it. And this happens. It's not like it's a crime. It's not like it's a problem. And that turned out not to be what I think DC wanted of the character at that point. And when that happens, that's fine. And it's always best for everybody then to just say, okay, maybe it'll happen again someday when the time is right, and ultimately that's what ended up happening.
One of the things I've really liked about the way you've handled Superman over the years is he's a character that writers tend to write as kind of preachy or talking down to the other characters, and it's really interesting how you're kind of balancing that with Action Comics, because compared to everyone else, this is an older Superman. He's dealt with way more than they have. He has insight they don't have. Is it a fine line to not have Superman be the talking down Boy Scout, or is it just something that he holds back?
Well, it's a couple of things. One is, whenever I hear the term Big Blue Boy Scout ascribed to Superman, it makes my toes curl up backward. It just, I hate that phraseology. And I do whatever I can not to write the character into that sort of a corner. But the other part of it is this, and I think this is really important to understand with regards to Superman. And I ask people to think of leaders, true leaders that they have known. And I know that people who I think of as having a certain kind of a presence where they can lead others are generally not the people who stand up in front of the room and give a speech and preach and say, I'm the leader, here's what we're going to do. To me, the most effective leaders are the ones who are in the room and are quiet. And they're the ones who then, when the chips are down, are going to be the one who they just kind of step forward. They don't correct anyone. They don't have to put anyone else in their place. They just kind of say, here's what's going to work. And they sort of exude that natural sense of trust that makes you confident in what they have to say. And I think that's how you write Superman, that Superman is not a rah-rah guy. He's never going to be the one who's, let's go beat the Nazis or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's not him. Superman is the guy who goes out and he does it, and he leads by example, and he leads by virtue of his actions, and not because he has to say, you know, I'm here, I'm bigger and stronger than you guys are, so here's what I say is going to happen. And that's how I approach it.
And as a Superman fan, that's what I like to see the most. What would you say is your favorite run at Marvel?
Of anybody or that I did?
Of yours.
Of mine. Yes. I look back on the experience I had writing Thor, and it was absolutely fantastic that I think I did it for, you know, about 7 years and was able to take the character on this really sort of wild arc that all centered around the idea of, here you have a character who says he's a god. And what does that mean? What does it mean he's able to do? And what does that mean when he lands on in the middle of Times Square and he says, you know, I am a Norse god. How do people react? What happens? So right from the very first issue where, you know, I was lucky enough to have John Romita Jr. drawing the book in this fantastic way and Tom Brevoort editing it, we had Thor basically on a city street and people reacting to him and speculating about him and saying, are you really a god? What does that mean? And gee, do you have a girlfriend? And, you know, all this other stuff. And I think I was able to take it on a natural arc for the character that ran 70 some issues. And I looked back on it and it was a great time. And I got to work with some tremendously talented people, whether it was, after JR, you know, Andy Kubert drew it and Stuart Immonen and Eric Larson stepped in for a couple of issues. And we just were able to have a lot of fun.
It was a great run though, too.
Thanks.
What would you say is your favorite DC run you've done over the years?
I think in a lot of ways the answer would to a certain extent have to be Superman, just because, you know, that's probably what most people would have to say. But at the same time, you know, I really am partial to the stuff I was able to do with Booster Gold. And yeah, I know it's not like he's on issue 575 or anything like that. But to be able to bring a character in, especially when I did it, because I was really green. I mean, nearly a rookie at the time. And write and draw a book and sort of fashion it the way you want to. And then later come back and be able to do it again and tell these fun stories with that character. To me, that was a lot of fun. And I still look back on that and had a great time doing it.
My follow-up to that one is, when's your next Booster Gold run?
I wish I knew. No, it's, you know, we always talk about stuff like that, and we talk about the right place to bring Booster back into things a little bit, and obviously it's something we kind of want to get done at some point.
All right, Andrew, we've got about time for one more.
All right. I guess my final question would be, who is the real man, Clark or Kal-El?
You know, that's always a good question and a good one to end it with. And I am, you know, it's interesting that I'm surprised there was even a debate about this. For me, it's 100% Clark. And the reasons for it should be, I think, fundamentally obvious. And that is that Clark, as we know him, or Superman, as we know him, was raised as Clark Kent on a farm outside Smallville by human parents. And yes, he has these fantastic abilities as Superman, but during his formative years, when you look at how children are raised from infancy to adulthood, the value system that became core to his being were instilled by Jonathan and Martha Kent. And I think because of that, the answer is always going to be Clark. And that's why the way I write Superman, he does not have a special relationship with Krypton. He does not look at it and ever say, great Ra'al. I never had Superman say that because he has no reason to have any interest in or exhibit any real special affinity for Kryptonian deities. And I just have always seen the answer as Clark, and that's certainly how I approach the character. And beyond that, he has to be Clark because I think that's what makes him relate to Lois. That what's different between Superman and Batman is at the end of the day, Superman comes home and Lois is there, and they have this wonderfully human existence. And yes, he is still Superman, but its roots and its basis takes place going back to that farm outside Smallville.
Fascinating answer.
That is a great
question. And I know a lot of guys disagree with me. So, there you go.
It is something I've learned in the trenches of Twitter. It is the fundamental question about how you see Superman, though.
I think that's why me and Keith get along so well.
Well, it is, but I think that anything else I look at, and to me it's artificial. I mean, Krypton, Kal-El, why? You know, it's not like he refers to himself as Kal-El, and it's not when we wrote him, for example, as, you know, we kind of made him way back when I was on Adventures of Superman. We did this storyline where he became more and more Kryptonian and cold and emotionless and everything else. And the whole point of that was to show that was the aberration for Superman. That all came out of the Eradicator and so many other things. And that was to show it as that is not who Superman is. He does not have that core response to Krypton. He does not have that core response to his, you know, for lack of a better term, birth parents. It's not like he spent 18 years of his formative life living on that planet or anything else. So to him, it exists more in the abstract.
That's fantastic. I always love talking Superman with you, Dan. It's every time I've talked about Superman a lot with you, and every time I glean a bit more of your philosophy of Superman, which I always admire.
If nothing else, Keith, what I like people to know is that this stuff is thought out. It's not like we just sit down and, you know, have this stupid attitude of, well, gee, you know, got to write an issue of Superman today. there is a tremendous amount of thought that goes into all of this, and I try and apply it in how I approach the character fairly consistently, and I think I've done that.
Well, I've always appreciated the care that you bring to the character.
Thank you.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure I didn't ask too many Superman questions, because that's all I would have asked.
And that would have been fine. This is on your dime, so that would have been just fine.
All right, we're going to wrap up. Dan, every second week we can read Action Comics, and everyone should be reading it. What else do you have coming up?
Right now, the next thing that's going to be coming out is the relaunch of, or the new launch, I should say, of Batman Beyond Rebirth. First issue, I think, is out in about 3 weeks, it's less than that. I believe it's either next week or the week after, and it just has tremendous art by Ryan Sook in the first issue, and it's absolutely wonderful stuff. And I really encourage everybody to give it a look.
All right, Andrew. Any last words? We're going to wrap this up.
No, just thanks very much, Dan. And I said this 4 years ago that I owe you a beer, and I'm going to have to owe you a second one for sure.
Okay, very good. I'll cash in.
All right. With that, we're OUT.
All right. Very good. Take care, guys.
Thanks a lot, Dan. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
You got it. My pleasure.